trying to think of the next thing that I really want to talk about, and I can't remember the specifics of it, but there's mention of three tramps.
Three what?
Tramps. So, or like...
homeless people.
Vagrants, homelesses, yeah. Homelesses.
Hobos.
Yeah, hobos, sure. And this seems to be a recurring theme throughout the Twin Peaks history as well. So even if there's just a passing reference or it's just in the background, tramps are everywhere. There's even one of the lodge spirits looks like a homeless guy.
Yeah, from Firewalk With Me.
It's just, it's one more thing. Like, the only thing that would have made it more Twin Peaks is if it was two tramps instead of three. Like, it's just these little things that are peppered in there. And I kind of referenced this as we were wrapping up season two about how it seems like there's a lot of stuff that's just in there to be re-referenced or to make a connection to something else.
Like, you just drop a nugget and then we're going to touch on this later. Or
yeah, you just dog
this is something we can maybe come back to.
Yeah.
Like, well, look how long it took to get from the creamed corn at the very beginning of season two to getting referenced again in Fire Walk With Me.
Right.
Things like that. It's just like, that wasn't even a thing for 20 episodes.
Yeah, like, what's the end game on creamed corn? Like, you don't know until this movie comes out.
Satisfaction. Full stomach. Yeah. A holiday well executed.
Holiday success.
Yeah. So just the three tramps in Dealey Plaza is a Kennedy thing, which, you know, that Cooper is into the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah.
You mentioned that in the early of the thing. And then in the book, his favorite book is the
Commission
Report. Yeah. Some stuff, like you said, I agree. Like, it's kind of just in there to be there, just to help tie stuff together. So to be honest, this middle section of the book, like the UFOs and the Kennedy stuff, like, my memory's not as sharp on this because I haven't had to go back to this stuff in a while. But I believe Fred Dillon is a real guy. I think a lot of this stuff is real stuff. And I think that this is him. Again, Cooper's obsession with Kennedy. Season two got accused of, well, they screwed up Laura Palmer and then they went off into like UFOs and stuff. And it's like, yeah, one, that gave birth to the X-Files and all the sci-fi shows for the next 30 years on primetime TV, but also
here's all the David Duchovny's career.
Yeah. Right. Well, there were a lot of Twin Peaks actors on X-Files, like, early on. I guess a Hawk in there and
Briggs is in there.
Yeah.
And then X-Files was huge because Breaking Bad guy got his start on their writing.
Yeah. Vince Gilligan.
Yeah. Gilligan got his start, or I don't know if it was his start, but like, he wrote a lot of X-Files episodes and maybe directed some. So I guess Hank and Skyler and a lot of people from Breaking Bad made early appearances on X-Files.
Wow.
So I'm not the biggest X-Files fan. I've actually only seen a handful of episodes or whatever. But, I mean, Twin Peaks, I mean, J.J. Abrams, Lindelof, all those guys. Twin Peaks changed television forever. Like, they're not joking.
Right.
But anyway, the Frost thing, I think this is his way of being like, hey, remember when we got criticized for going all UFO? Well, I'm going to like double down on all this cool
stuff.
I'm going to make this work.
Huge middle finger.
Yeah. Exactly. I can see that.
I'm going to make this work. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, honestly, this whole section, these multiple sections of all these investigations and just the different eyewitness reports and the stuff about Milford himself kind of getting shadowed, followed around for looking into them. I think this is just a way to not pad the book, but it's stuff that kind of over-explains what it is he's up to. It shows almost his entire career as this X-Files style investigator of these situations. And there are a couple of talking points. Overall, it's a little repetitive for me.
Yeah, I agree.
I think so too, yeah.
It's a lot of conversations that kind of go in circles and don't resolve. But the mention of the three tramps stood out to me on my listen through, because I kind of like mentally dog-eared that. I was like, homeless people, that's a thing.
That yes, homeless around. People are real.
Not like Eskimos.
Have you guys all seen Mulholland Drive?
I have.
So David Lynch has a thing with homeless people too, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, crazy. It's a crazy, like, again, someone should look this up, and I'm sure I'm misquoting it because it's been 20 years since I read it. But I think Lynch on Lynch, the book, or one of his old interviews, he talks about, I think he had a traumatic experience when he was young. He might have been, like, I don't know, accosted or, like, had a weird encounter with, but, like, I think that that's, I don't think that David Lynch looks down on homeless people and people's suffering. I think that people in ragged clothes covered in dirt scared the shit out of him one time. And it's like a source of, it's a source of trauma for him.
Yeah.
And this is revisited in Mulholland Drive. Yep. The guys you're talking about in the convenience store meeting, that are in the
And the one that shows up in the trailer with Carl Rod and Chad Desmond. That's what reminds me of what you're referencing in Mulholland Drive.
Absolutely. And the camera move into the trailer.
Yep.
Kind of reminiscent of. So, fellas, Mulholland Drive has a scene in it, and it's the scariest scene that's ever been made in a movie ever. And
I am sold.
I can't explain it, and I don't know what it's about, but
I saw that
opening weekend in the theater, in the movie theaters in whatever 2003 or 2001, whenever it came out.
2001. It
scared the absolute shit out of me. And I watched it again like 3 or 4 months ago with a friend of mine. It's the scariest thing I've ever seen. It's just about mood. It's just about mood. It's not particularly gross. It's not a jump scare per se. It's the scariest 5 minutes I've ever seen in any movie ever. And that's been true for 20 years now. So
That's crazy.
Noted.
Revolves around a tramp. There you go.
But there's definitely a lot of recurring themes in Lynch's work.
And so there you go. I believe the three tramps in Dealey Plaza is a thing. Like, I believe there's historical record of somebody noticing three people that were homeless in the area before Kennedy was killed, whatever.
Yeah.
However, I don't think you're wrong for that to pop out in your mind. And that may be a Frost nod to Lynch's kind of whatever phobia or use of that type of character. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, he may have popped that in there with the idea that one day David Lynch will read it and he'll get there and just go, oh.
Yeah.
You didn't tell me there were going to be tramps.
No, he did tell him, and that's why he hasn't read it.
And that's canon.
That's canon. Boom.
Do we need to talk about anything else as far as UFO investigations?
Quick response. What was the significance of his receipt from buying the car and the whole thing with his car?
Man.
I don't have an answer. I just remember it because they talk about it, and then some more dialogue happens, and then it's referenced like, "Oh, but here was a receipt for the car he bought and TP."
verified. This is a car
for the Buick Roadmaster.
Yeah.
Can't tell you. I remember now. Can't tell you.
Son of a dick. All right.
Actually, I don't know. I don't know if I can tell you. I believe a 1947 Buick Roadmaster appears in The Return at some point. I believe.
Okay.
Fair enough.
That works.
Or it's in the original show. But it's one of those like obscure.
Yeah.
I don't think this has any plot point. I think this Buick Roadmaster shows up somewhere else.
That wasn't the car that Evelyn Marsh's husband crashed, was it?
You know what? Holy crap. It might be.
No, so I don't think it was.
One thing that I regret is of my, not of my life, but like, I am not a car guy and I'm not a sports guy.
You still have time, man. You don't have to live in regret.
I'm not either.
Yeah.
But you're a Twin Peaks guy.
Yeah, but like there's a whole thing about cars in Twin Peaks, like so and so's car, and I can't get into it too much with The Return, but like Mark Frost
and
Lynch, they are car guys, or at least in their use of cars in film. Like they're like, oh, you remember when I was growing up, my father had a whatever, and I thought it was the coolest car ever, so I'm gonna put it in my movie. Like they like cars. They remember cars. So there are a lot of cars in Twin Peaks, and I don't know nothing about them.
I want a book about that. Just a picture book of the cars in Twin Peaks.
Chickadee on a Dodge Dart.
Yes. Somebody listening should make an indexed coffee table book.
I'd buy it. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
There's probably an Instagram for it. Someone has an Instagram of just the flannel in Twin Peaks. So, I mean, yeah.
So just continuous pictures of Leo and Big Ed.
Yeah, Big Ed. A lot of Big Ed. There's a ton of Big Ed on that page. No, but there is, yeah. Or maybe if it's not maybe there's also, I feel like there's a sweaters one too. I'm pretty sure there's a flannel one. But anyway, there's got to be something out there.
Yeah, that's whether it's awesome.
A website or someone's fan page. I would buy a coffee table book in a heartbeat. That sounds awesome.
Maybe Stephen Miller.
He's probably the one who would have a page about the cars in Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
He's the one guy, if you remember, when I showed you the gazebo, he had a whole page about the gazebo in Twin Peaks because I referenced that. No, he's amazing. His blog is awesome. It's just so detailed, and I can't get over it sometimes when I'm looking at stuff on there. It's amazing. So thank you, Steve, if you're...
Yeah, he helped me in my tour video.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I think I saw that in the... You mentioned that he helped with
I've
that.
Seen very few clips.
I've showed a few clips.
First clip I saw was one of my biggest gripes of the infrastructure of Twin Peaks.
Yeah, this is pretty great.
Damn red light at this intersection.
Sparkwood and 21.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we talk
about a curve in the road.
Yeah, in our fire walk with me, it's like it's not an intersection, it's a curve in a road, and the red light doesn't actually exist. which I love. Yeah.
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 So thank you.
There's definitely some return spoilers in there.
I literally cut clips for them. That's what I made sure to have them not go watch that. Yeah.
Nice. But yeah,
you need to see some of his work.
But the TwinPeaksBlog.com is amazing. He broke down the Philadelphia office
that
David Bowie shows up in. And that building doesn't exist anymore, but he figured out where it was and what windows they shot out of it. And
it's that detailed.
I don't have time for that.
Picture and the American flag and the clock. Like he breaks down every prop and every room and every angle and every camera. Like it's the most comprehensive.
Yeah. There's a whole page of just about Cooper's room at the Great Northern with what was on his nightstand in this episode, it's just and sometimes he finds the props. I mean, he's the one that had the little Elvis prop when we brought that up. Elvis a bath. I found that on his blog.
If you're listening, I will give you $207 for that.
For little Elvis.
Please.
So you've gotten the slush fund and you're just it's burning a hole in your pocket.
Oh yeah.
So good.
You guys know the backstory of that?
The little Elvis?
Not at all.
Nothing. Please. Just that he went to take a bath, never saw him again. I assume he drowned.
Never saw him again. Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Oh, I'm crying. So
the story is that Elvis Presley used to call his member Little Elvis.
Oh, get it together, Elvis.
So Ben Horn had just had sex with Catherine Martell.
Yeah.
And he says, I'm going to go give Little Elvis a bath, implying that he needs to go wash up after having sex. And they thought that that might have problems getting past the TV censor. So I don't know if it was the director or Richard Boehmer. I don't know whose idea it was, but they're like, how about when he says that, he just pulls out a little Elvis doll?
Yeah.
People won't make the connection right away and it'll get past the censors. And that's what they did. And that's what happened. So
it worked.
It's an Elvis penis.
That's the workaround.
I like the idea that Richard Boehmer just had it in his pocket. He's like, well, I've got a little Elvis right here.
In the hotel room, I always carry a little Elvis around.
At the table read, he goes, oh, no way.
Otherwise, imagine the prop master that was like, you have to go find a tiny little Elvis figurine. Right. Here's $20. Good luck.
Whatever, dude. He just went to the e-shelf and pulled out that little Elvis he's had on deck.
All right.
Anyway, back to UFO.
We're talking about a book. Project Sign. That was a prompt.
Project Sign, Project Grudge. These are all just different ways of investigating the same thing that Dougie Milford's been getting into.
Yes. Basically.
So Project Grudge is the one that's way more about keeping things from the public, like taking it and if there's evidence, take it away and hide it. And Sign was more about understanding what was happening.
Yeah. And I think if they did make a show or a spinoff or something, or, you know, this would be your kind of like nuts and bolts of the, you know, episode one, he finds this and episode, you know, the season one ending is we're getting rid of Project Sign and now it's going to be Project Grudge and you're going to have to destroy all the evidence that you just found.
Right.
I haven't personally watched Project Blue Book on the History Channel, so I can't say that it's not what this is.
Forgot they have a...
I posted something about that, though. John Bernardi, somebody responded, and they're like, you know that Harley Payton, or I don't know, maybe it was Robert Ingalls. I don't know. So somebody was, like, involved in that show. Like, one of the Twin Peaks writers was involved in the Project Blue Book show. Apologies if maybe I dreamed this. Oh, but
no, I think you're right. I think I heard that too.
Yeah.
No, that's cool. I'll check it out. So there you go. Like, now that we're getting into UFOs and government conspiracy, like, a lot of this stuff is true.
Yeah.
A lot of it is true, that it's just weaved into the, which I think it's cool because, like, there's not a lot of that in one spot. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I thought I knew something about Lewis and Clark. Like, I'm from Indiana and there's historical ties to Lewis and Clark here because they were involved in like Indian wars and stuff in my area before they did the expedition, whatever. So like, I kind of thought I knew a little something about that. And then, but Meriwether Lewis dying under mysterious circumstances and all of that stuff. Like, I didn't know that till I read the book. And then I found out that was true. And then, so I don't know. So it's just, I'm going in and out of all this real history versus what's real, what's in Twin Peaks, what's kind of a hybrid of both. It's cool.
I've always felt weird about any time somebody does a revisionist history like this, where they take actions and put them on somebody, because I don't know, for me, it would be really weird if I was a known descendant of a historical figure. Then I went and read a book like this. It was like, and behind the scenes, they were wearing rings that they stole off bodies. And
you are Dave.
Were covering up government conspiracies. Like, that's my ancestor, man. Like, that didn't happen.
Project Sign, Project Grudge, all kind of doing their shit.
So can we talk about the book house?
We can.
I've been on the waiting list for years.
So I love the entire backstory of the book house / the book house boys.
/ what was the original term?
The Citizens Brigade.
Love that. I wish it was still that.
Yeah, that's... It's just really cool, like, seeing that these guys, one, were so tight-knit, like, even when Hank was a part of it, like, he was a part of it. Like, they were all in it together.
It was that football game, man.
Yeah, yep. It was playing football together. And
I love that game gets referenced to it, like, one point, because I remember thinking in my first read-through, I was like, I want to hear more about that game. And then it comes back up, like, later. Like, oh, yeah.
And everyone around him just be like, we should have won that game.
But they
still stuck it together as a sort of the Twin Peaks militia. I mean, basically brothers in arms, like, all the way from high school up through their adult lives. And them getting together at this lending library as their meeting place is what got them the name Bookhouse Boys. I love that. This is the secret history that I was trying to get into. This is the stuff I needed. This is the meat.
And that's how, like, I felt. And this is chapter 12.
Yeah, this is it's that slow build, and you finally get to it, and you start clapping.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
I think Dave and I were separated at birth because when I hit this, I was like, yes, okay, cool. Now we're
now we have arrived.
Yeah. This is why I pre-ordered this book. This is why.
Yep. You know.
Yeah. This is. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff, but for all intents and purposes, this is the good stuff.
Yeah,
I think it's all intensive purposes.
You're right.
Yes.
I love getting everybody's backstories through other people's accounts, too.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I think I actually, immediately after Hawk's history of Ed and Nadine,
I was like,
this is really inclusive. And
where he has a like super potty mouth.
He's got a super foul mouth, the whole thing. It's like, this seems really uncharacteristic, or maybe he's just really heated while he's writing this.
But great, too. We get to hear actual Hawk talk, as we like to refer to it, with Michael Horse on the audiobook. Yes. It's awesome. Yeah,
that was wonderful.
So real quick, the only thing I love about the Bookhouse, I believe from this point on, you've got these little inserts in the Secret History novel that are supposed to be
from the Bookhouse.
Pamphlets or whatever from the Bookhouse. So the Ed and Nadine, Cooper's Josie Packard dossier or whatever it is.
I love it. It's so scathing.
Yeah.
He tears her up. It's so good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the other thing too. It's just like, I mean, was he just writing this at night? How did he have time to just, and you know, as far as I knew, we never knew in the show that he knew Andrew Packard was alive.
Right. Well, and then speaking of, again, like this whole revisionist history thing, like back to Briggs being abducted in the woods, like in the, when did he give the Cooper Owl's message? Right. Like you find out at the end of this book that basically, like, he and Cooper, in the show, it's one night that they were supposed to go fishing, and they hung out for a little bit, and then Briggs got abducted. And then in the book, it's like, oh, no, me and Cooper, like, hung out. We talked. More than once.
Right,
If the original show took place over 2 weeks, it feels like, as this book would tell it, might have been a few months.
Maybe.
Right.
Because they hung out, like he got to know Cooper and he established his trust. And you know, basically the end of this book is Briggs saying, I need to pass all this information off. Cooper is my successor.
So yeah, he was like grooming him for
being the watcher. To be the next archivist.
The next dweller on the threshold.
That they had hung out. But if you just watch original show, it's like, when did they have time to hang out?
Right.
Yeah. And he said,
when did they have time to write anything about Josie?
And reading it sounds very much like this is during Cooper's flannel period. Yeah, when he was it was not an official agent. Like
he wasn't working.
Took up a hobby, and that hobby was writing people's dirty laundry.
That hobby was Briggs.
I was gonna say he was working. I mean, he technically was working for the Twin Peaks Sheriff Department.
Yes.
He just wasn't working for the FBI.
But then also speaking of the revisionist thing, not only when did Cooper have time to hang out with Briggs, when did he have time to write the Andrew Packard case? Hawks, the Ballad of Ed and Norma and Nadine, I believe, I got to double check, but the events that take place in that is not how it went down. It's not Ed, the way Ed explains it to Cooper in the show.
Not at all.
Not what happened.
I feel like totally that's different. Kind of like reframing the situation so he doesn't throw shade at Nadine.
Maybe, but in the show, doesn't he say it happens like right after high school? But in this, it's like 20 years later.
Is it?
It's a massive gap.
And
I'm pretty sure it is.
Literally,
they make it sound like if this takes place in like the early 80s when Nadine shows, you know, when they have that thing, because it's been years since high school. But in the show, it's like this was right out of high school.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just remember the situation of the bullet.
Yeah.
Like,
in one of them, he was teaching her how to shoot and there was a misfire and he blames himself for it. And then the other one, the bullet like ricocheted and hit her or something. Like basically like the broad stroke is the same.
Yeah.
So the average person that hasn't seen the show a million times could see the show and then 6 months later read the book and it didn't for me, to be honest. The first time through, I didn't really notice the thing. And then it was like, I'd read the book, and then I was getting ready for the return to come, and I think I went and rewatched some of the original series, and I saw the episode where Ed's telling the story, and I'm like...
Which is a great moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, like, maybe one of my favorite moments of the show. Because it really...
Especially with Albert,
Albert makes a joke, but you really get to Ed, what's eating at Ed and what the whole Nadine thing is all about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then you read the book and it's the same story. Like the broad stroke is
I think it's just the time
gained a bunch of strength.
All that stuff is the broad stroke is the same, but all the minor details are all different. They're all different. So again, is this because is Hawk covering for somebody when he wrote his story? Is this because these guys, this is 40 years later and they don't remember it exactly. Is it something else?
You get the idea that maybe someone tampered with this dossier at some point?
Honestly, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
The first time I read it through, because
Obviously, I have my suspicions. I don't know if you guys do, but
yeah, if you've seen
that never occurred to me. Because to my understanding, this is all supposed to be, or these bits are supposed to be handwritten documents that were like written out and just left around for people to pick up and read.
So, Patrick, right. are you saying they
via,
were
like, or vis-a-vis Cooper writing these things about Josie for Truman to find? Just be like, yo, this is how it really was. Sorry about it.
Yeah. Would you say like the handwritten documents were rewritten and replaced, or
not sure? I mean, it could also be that we're not seeing like. Obviously, everything. We're not seeing stuff crossed out or whatever.
Yeah, but everything.
If this was found at a crime scene in 2016, like it says,
yeah.
Because obviously, there are, you know, to go back to the time travel things within this, the archivist mentions that Catherine Martel is now a recluse, but the last entry in this is like 2 days after Coop's out of the Black Lodge, or a day after, you know, so like a week after this. How would they know she's a recluse? How would they know when Hank Jennings died, you know, two years later?
Right.
Little things like that. I think there's more at play with when this was found and the time travel aspects that have come into play a little bit.
I thought that my first thing with the whole Fear the Double thing and how season two ended, the fact that Evil Cooper is out roaming the earth,
yep.
arguably or supposedly at this point, who knows, but
Mayday.
Exactly. So like,
exactly, yeah.
Basically, is Evil Cooper out there? Did he intercept this book? If the secret code in this book is Fear the Double, then can we trust any of this information? As I was reading,
that's what I was getting at.
Yeah.
Did I just waste 2 weeks of my life reading this?
No, not at all. I don't think so at all.
I do like that idea of like Fear the Double being written in the books too, or being like coded in books. At the bookhouse, if those documents, if Bad Cooper got his hands on Cooper's stuff or anyone else's stuff that he could mimic the handwriting of, then that's, I mean, the pen is mightier than the sword. You know, the slander can be life-destroying for somebody.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Maybe that wasn't Hawk who wrote that account, you know?
Like, right.
It seemed very uncharacteristic. I'm also really, really glad to have gotten this information in either reading it or hearing it as an audiobook the way I did, because if this information was given to us in the show, it would take 8 episodes to get through one of these pages.
Right.
And it would not be delivered like somebody talking like a human person. It would be sporadic and the speech cut up and very awkwardly delivered. And yeah. I don't think we could have gotten the information the same way.
No, definitely not.
Like this, I'm just saying, this is the medium for this.
Also, Hank Jennings and the bombing of Andrew Packard, those events are different as well.
Yeah, they are.
Slightly. Again, broad strokes are the same. Andrew Packard supposedly died, but then came back. But the how those events went down, the details of those events contradict each other.
One of the biggest ones for me that contradicts the show is the relationship between Hank Jennings and Jean Renault, or as we like to say, Jean Renault. They make it sound like they go way back, and when they find each other at One Night Jack's, he thinks he's Daryl Lodwick or whatever the guy's name was. Like they had never met before. But in this book, it's like they had a whole relationship doing dirty work with each other, you know? So it's like, that was like, whoa, what?
Yeah, that didn't track for me either. It was one of those things where I kind of perked up. I was like, that's not right.
I didn't catch on.
And we do need to talk, the other one for me, we need to talk about, because Tyler's big thing with the season 2 finale was Audrey.
Oh, you assholes.
Yeah, we kept tagging on like, I think she died. Tyler was finally like, Audrey lives.
I was way more graphic.
You were very graphic.
You're very hawk-like.
But one of the big things for me that was another just it didn't match up with the show was her note to her dad, because it made it seem like they were still at odds.
Yeah. The voice actor they got.
Yeah, it was not.
Was just awful.
It was not Audrey.
Yeah, yeah, that was not Audrey. Audrey.
Yeah.
Hey, Dad.
Daddy.
Basically, everything about every character that we know and love from the original Twin Peaks and what we thought we knew about events that went down with those characters in this book has been changed slightly.
Yeah,
pretty much. The Good Audrey, way. The Ben Horn thing is pretty much all the same. They talk about, yeah. Oh, so the Audrey Horn thing, growing up, there was speculation. I guess that there were already some drafts or some ideas for a third season at some point. But that was the idea that she survived has been out there for years and years. But it was very obscure. Like, you had to, like,
well, there was the whole,
you know, if that was true. But well, yeah, there was one of the big things that pops in this book is you're like, okay, Audrey lived, Pete mm-hmm. and the old man and an unidentified body who we know as Andrew Packard.
What about the everybody other two else people? Recognized? What about the new accounts lady or the security guard who just had a baby? Or
they were so excited they had to leave before the bomb went off.
Whatever.
No, well, that, I mean, even, I mean, there was, this is a total side thing, but with Audrey being, they were maybe going to, Mulholland Drive was going to maybe be a spinoff series about Audrey, but then it became just the movie and not about Audrey or connected to Twin Peaks at all.
Right.
But it was initially going to be that.
It was supposed to be Audrey Horn Goes to Hollywood was the genesis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Opportunity missed.
Like Joey.
Right. Yeah, like Friends. Yeah, Joey.
The other smash hit spinoff.
Yes.
Yeah. But this was like years later, though. I mean, this was like the end of the 90s, I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
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 One question I had was Josie, the stuff they said about Josie being, of course, super conniving and a match for Catherine, that all tracks. But the stuff they were talking about her being like super wealthy, or was that, were they talking about Josie? Like, had all this influx of
Josie
cash?
Josie was from, secretly wealthy from her crimes. Okay.
Yeah.
Overseas.
But there's no mention of that in the show, is there?
No, just that she was notorious in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Like, she was just a known criminal element there,
right,
and was not being forthcoming to Sheriff Truman.
Yeah.
And it seemed like Cooper knew a lot more than Harry did.
But did she, lose that cash? Because she was, you know, her whole thing of being blackmailed and being cat, you know, cast maid.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, look at me. all that crap. I don't know. It's just stuff like I'm noticing inconsistencies as we talk about it.
Yeah, like, why would you, kind of weird. If you have that, why would you just go, nope, I'm going to go to where my money is.
Yeah, I'm going to go fuck my cousin in on a Hong boat. Kong. Yeah.
Cousin Jonathan. I love, too, this was where it was mentioned, too, that Andrew Packard's boat was named Josie, because I said that to you guys for, like, I think in an episode forever ago, and you guys just groaned, but that was from from this book. You're like, oh, no, don't like that.
Yeah. That did happen, yeah.
Yep. Another inconsistency I noticed with the audiobook, there were some things that were said that were different from what I was reading, when I was actually listening and reading. But it was just little things, like there was something, it might have been Josie's autopsy, but it's Dr. Will Hayward, but the narrator said Dan Hayward.
Yeah, that threw me too.
Yeah, there was a couple of things like that Dan were a Hayward. Little off, yeah. And that's like way too off to be just like, I see what you're
doing. Well, in the recording, they couldn't go, Dan Hayward's dad.
It's not Dan, it's Will.
Yeah. I gotta look that up. There's a.
I know there's more than that because I feel like I read about it, but that was the one that I actually really caught when I was reading it.
I think earlier in the book there is supposed to. So Will Hayward's father was supposed to be a doctor too, and his name was Dan, and they might have just accidentally read that name again later when it's supposed to be Will or something like that. But whatever.
Doesn't somebody reference Charles Desmond too?
Yeah, it says Charles Desmond instead of Chet. I think.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I think so. Yeah.
I was like, that's not right either.
Nope, it's Chester.
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 Old Chet Desmond. You got that sound? You got that sound effect?
This has nothing to do with the book, but I need to know just loads more about Josie's death.
You gotta watch Take the Ring talk about wood theory.
I'll do that. Until then, I'll hold on to my Horcrux theory.
I sent you the video. Talks about wood theory.
All right.
You guys could probably watch my episode 4 of the Town of Twin Peaks.
I sent most of it. There were two things that I caught that I didn't want to show them, but they're so minor. They're so minor. Otherwise, it's perfect.
One of them involves the bookhouse, right?
Yes.
Photograph in the bookhouse.
Photograph in the bookhouse. Yeah.
Is it of Josie's drawer knob?
Not.
Okay.
Someone took a photo of it when it happened.
Harry got down there with his Nokia.
his iPhone.
Where did he get the money to afford a camera phone?
He's a sheriff.
The other one, I think, was a quick thing in the section about wood theory. It was just one minor thing you said that I cropped when I sent them the clip.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I tried to make that one return spoiler free.
Yeah, you mostly did. It's great. It's fantastic.
But I think to a person like me, I wouldn't pick up on anything touching on the return.
One was just a picture, and one was just a quick mention of something that I don't want to say out loud.
That's fine. So those are the families of Twin Peaks.
Yes.
Yeah. It's such a great section. I mean, it's still like, I mean, with those inconsistencies to the show withstanding, it's still super, super fascinating to read. Also mention, I loved looking at the menu of the double R in the book. Absolutely. I just thought that was a nice touch.
What was the soup of the day?
I don't know if that was written on the menu, but maybe it was.
Rabbit chili.
Yeah.
Walleye.
I think the specials were only listed on the
The specials are never mentioned.
Hey, speaking of double R, one thing with Norma that bugged me was her maiden name being Lindstrom and her mom's name not being whatever M.T. Wentz's real name was in the show. But it wasn't Blackburn, and there's no mention of Annie at all. She doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Does she?
That's another thing that people... Whatever. So we get this book that's supposed to be The Secret Lives, and we're supposed to get all this back for you. And other than Audrey didn't die, and here's the menu.
Which is my only takeaway from the book.
And,
yeah, that was your takeaway.
And everything you thought you knew about Twin Peaks happened, but didn't happen the way you remember it.
Right.
Like, everyone was just like, what?
So to Tyler and Dave, I'll just, do you have any thoughts or feelings as to maybe why this is this way?
No.
I mean...
I only ask because I read several reviews of this book that were published when the book came out that sort of alluded to things that, well, I'm not going to say anymore, but they were on the right track.
Things like that, things like Amy's name being Blackburn and Norma's name being Lindstrom, that can, and it never comes up in the series or anything, but that could be like they have different fathers.
Right. And maybe I think I read too something with the 3D glasses. When you put on the 3D glasses on that page, that name goes away. Like Lindstrom goes away.
What shows up?
I could be wrong, but maybe. I feel like I read that, on like the postcard page maybe or something. I read it on, it was on the fandom because they have a whole section on the 3D.
Interesting.
Things. Yeah.
It
says on Norma's postcard to her parents, the red obscures all her text, including the name and address of her parents, Lindstrom rather than Blackburn.
And he could have been adopted?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of that, you know.
Norma like could have been adopted?
Yeah, stepmom. Yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, those are easier to brush aside as like, there's more that we don't know.
It's also easier in life, if you have a complicated situation like that, to just say, oh, it's my sister, or it's my cousin.
Yeah.
And maybe you're not blood related at all, but it's just easier than having to explain that.
Right. Is do you know off the top of your like is Annie mentioned in this book at all?
No, she's not. So that was we're just up in a uproar about was like
there was very little about Wyndham Earle too, right? Because it's interesting that Briggs didn't mention anything about because in those last few days before the Black Lodge stuff, I mean, he was pretty involved with Wyndham Earle.
Yeah, he's only mentioned in passing.
Yeah,
exactly.
He was on that list of names that TV found. That had no other explanation. This is all the list says.
This is a list of names on a secret server.
Yes. Great. Yeah. Thanks.
That pays off in a way. So you obviously like in the context of this coming out, the book coming out, we knew we were getting more Twin Peaks.
Right.
So it wasn't like, oh, they didn't say this.
Yeah. It wasn't like this came out in 2000 and then you had to wait 17 years or whatever. Yeah, it was
like, okay, well, in 6 months, maybe they'll expand on this, or maybe I would just say don't get too much of your hopes up on that.
Yeah, don't get your hopes up.
Oh, I've stopped having hopes after like episode 3 of the first season.
But after the I was gonna mention the log lady, but that kind of jumps ahead. But basically later on, we have the next section is called The Coming of What, after the bookhouse and our Twin Peaks people, and that's when we get into Richard Nixon, a guy named Jack Parsons, and the we're back to the Dougie Milford like government intrigue stuff.
And I checked out on this like both times I listened to it, like it just was not engaging or anything, and I couldn't understand it.
Is this the bit? Is it in this sort of collection where there's the like secret meeting with Nixon and an unnamed celebrity, and they go and see the alien in the facility?
Brad Pitt. Yeah. So
there are some takeaways. I feel like, I mean, you can probably explain this better. I mean, there's a few takeaways from this section, and maybe you can explain it in a good way for Tyler.
Yeah. The short answer is, Tyler, I agree with you. The first time I got to this, I didn't know what to think. This is an even more scattered, random document. Like, here's a document, here's a document, here's a document. And
yeah,
there's Nixon, I guess. And then there's this guy who worked on jet fuel, who's having sex rituals in Area 51. And here's
band name.
The ring, I guess, and whatever. So it's really disjointed, and it goes by really fast. And I didn't get it at first.
Well, Ron Hubbard swings by on a rope.
Yeah.
Yep.
Drops off a Western story.
This, I don't know how much this has to do with the return, but after the return, and now that there's been some time that everything's kind of stopped, this is my absolute favorite part of the book.
Yeah.
Don't tell me that. It's not my least favorite part, but it's definitely like a part I thought I could just brush off.
No, but like that's okay, because you will.
That is okay.
You will revisit this stuff. You'll be like, so I have this in my notes, like when we, I might as well just say it now when we closed the show, was just like, I maintain this novel works on its own, but only after you wrap your head around it. And it massively helps if you're familiar with the entire Twin Peaks universe, especially The Return. It is also jam-packed full of references that enhance the story of The Return. The Showtime series works by itself, arguably, but this book is absolutely packed with nuggets of information that continue to blow my mind when coming back to it. That being said, my preferred method of reading this book now is one tiny section at a time, usually in the context of what is inspiring me or what I'm interested in or what I am researching at the moment. So basically, there's stuff in here that I totally blew over, didn't think was important, didn't think was interesting, wasn't paying attention, or in one ear, out the other. And then 6 months later, I'm like, what was that, three tramps again? And then, I've kind of outlined the pieces of the story. So like, if you follow my guide here, it's kind of more or less easy to find stuff. But if you don't know or remember where it is, like, you have to go digging again.
Yeah.
What was that? What was that crap about the UFOs? Oh, okay. I think it's in the middle here somewhere. Oh, no, this is about the natives. And then you start reading, like, okay. And then you start reading about the natives and Jeremiah Johnson, and you'll be like, oh, this is cool. This kind of makes me think about something else. You know what I mean? I don't know. Like, I'm just, that's why this book is so hard to pin down, because it's not one thing. It's a million different things.
Bunch of different things.
It stands on its own, but not really. Like, you kind of have to have Twin Peaks for this book to work. On the other hand, if you didn't know anything about Twin Peaks, you could kind of take away that this is about Special Army guy Dougie Milford and all his.
I would agree that, like, if you take out the bits that TP verifies with the whole Laura case, like, I would read this first. Like, this is so interesting and like prepares you for so much that happens in the show. Like, I would read this, then watch season 1, 2, then Firewalk.
Interesting.
Yeah, if you didn't have that spoiler,
take that little bit out. Like, it explains so much and sets you up. Like, if you knew all of this information and you were going into the show not being a fan of anything supernatural or mystery or anything like that, like, it would prepare you for so much that happens in the show.
Yeah.
Season two and all the Briggs, Blue Book stuff would probably be like your favorite seat because you would really be primed for that stuff.
Well, and you would know that Lana Budding Milford is an assassin.
That's right. A sex assassin.
Yeah, you would know.
So I can't talk about this section. It's my favorite section, but it's all related to you have to watch The Return and read the final dossier and then come back to all this stuff. Oh, but the main thing about this coming of what section is the ring shows back up and Nixon is wearing it.
That's so fascinating.
Yeah, dude.
I will say the person they got to voice Audrey was terrible, but the person they got to voice Nixon was pretty good.
Dead on.
But yeah, then it goes into more Project Blue Book stuff. This is where it all like joins back together. So you get into the coming of what, back to Project Blue Book, and then Search for Intelligent Life is the next big section. But then that bleeds in. That's where this UFO secret government agent crap bleeds into the Twin Peaks. This is where you get your Margaret Lanterman, Carl Rodd backstory. This is where they brush over Laura Palmer again and Jacoby. Yeah. And
Log Lady's story is so cool too. I love that they gave they gave her the, because her, the actress is Catherine Coulson. So they gave her her last name.
I cried.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah,
I cried in Log Lady's bit. At work, just weeping and trying not to let anybody see.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
One thing that Frost, that I don't think that people give Twin Peaks enough credit, is that, like, and Frost is a traditional, I can't remember who said this, but the idea of writing and creating characters, and you put your characters through hell because that creates drama. You create people that people identify with, and then you make them suffer, and the audience just goes with it. And that's what creates drama and interest. And man, this book, it's crushing. Absolutely crushing.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. The Log Lady's backstory is the most heartbreaking thing I've ever read in my life. Yeah. And I'm surprised you said that. And again, how much weight would I feel the same if I didn't know the show? Would I feel the same if I didn't remember her from the show? Would I feel the same if I hadn't seen the Log Lady intros and the knowing that she's this wise?
Well, see, lady. I hadn't seen any of those. And then minus that, I really had no attachment to Log Lady, like, even up to the end, maybe a little more so after Fire Walk With Me, because I think that's probably one of the few things that tied the main series back together for me, was her, like, just, or it was missing pieces, even.
Yeah, there's that scene of her, yeah.
Like, first of all, why the fuck wasn't that in the movie? But, like, her story, I had no ties to her. Mm. Like, she was nothing to me.
She was the town crazy.
She was just this weird person who carried around a giant stick.
It's a log. She's not the giant stick.
What kind?
Yeah, we don't call her giant stick lady.
I don't know. So, like, that being said, that gives more, I don't know. Like,
well, I mean, a lot of this stuff just gives more depth to all of these characters.
Yeah. Honestly. Like, and me saying, like, reading this minus the small spoiler of Laura's death, like, before watching the series, like, would make everything a little more engaging or easier to follow and not ruin mystery, because her storyline, like, what you learn in this book, wouldn't spoil anything.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not how it's presented. I don't know if the show mentions it, but definitely the Access Guide to the Town book that came out 20 years before has a little bit of the backstory in it. And again, it's not the same, just like all the other Twin Peaks, like the broad strokes are the same, but all the details are different. But man, like, especially the log lace, like, does it, at this point, does it matter?
Yeah.
I mean, like, if even if he's just blatantly rewriting his character's history, like, this was some of the most engaging, cool.
Yeah.
Sad, dramatic, like
this stuff. This was the most dramatic part of the book.
Yeah.
Like, this was the most, like, tug on your heartstrings moment in the book.
Yeah, it was awesome.
It was really good.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, super effective. It gave weight to the character that I wasn't emotionally prepared for.
Yeah.
Like, I knew she had a tragic backstory. I didn't know the details. And to have it told so candidly and really lovingly was just more than I was ready for when it came up.
Yeah.
And how you get a little bit of a different perspective on everybody, like, you know, Jacoby talking about Nadine. And, you know, you get different people's perspectives on a situation. Was it Robert Jacoby that was writing about her and her story? And
yes,
I think so. Yeah.
In this book, Dr. Jacoby has a brother named Robert who runs the Twin Peaks Gazette or the Twin Peaks Post.
Yeah.
After the Milford takeover,
which the first time I listened to it, they talked about Jacoby dying. And I was like, oh shit. Like, did they just kill off this guy in the book? And I was very concerned, but then I talked to Patrick about it. Like, maybe it was his brother.
Cleared it
turns
all up
out
for you.
It was.
Yeah,
to have this new character giving you these events, like somebody who you don't really have any connection with. Like, this isn't a character that you relate to already.
It's the same with Doug and Milford.
Yeah, for them to get to tell you this story.
Yeah.
And for it to still have the impact that it does, it's just exquisite writing. Like, this is an example of really excellent writing.
Yes.
In a book that has been very disjointed and with a lot of disconnected ideas and a lot of great dialogue, like all of the interviews and the notes, it all sounds like it's from different people.
Yeah.
Like it's written as though, like, these are actually collected documents. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
To accomplish this with an unknown character previously, to talk about a known character and for that point of view, to have that impact is just, this is art. This book is art.
Yeah.
I would add one more kind of, in my mind, a parallel to, like, kind of like Lynch's body of work. When, do you know, Lynch makes all these kind of surreal, abstract horror movies or whatever, you know, and his whole career been accused of, like, not knowing what he was doing or not being a good, like, if people have to do a research project to understand your movies, then are your movies any good? And, like, this is just absurdist stuff and whatever. But you know what? He made The Elephant Man, and then he, in the 90s, when he was, like, kind of at his lowest, and he's doing Fire Walk With Me and Lost Highway and all this stuff, he went and did The Straight Story, which is the most
on Disney Plus. Like,
yeah, is it now? If it's on Disney Plus now, you got to watch it.
It is, which is, like, ridiculous that there's a David Lynch movie on Disney Plus.
It has nothing. I can go watch it now.
Yeah,
you can
watch it now. I'm gonna watch it after.
It's rated G, and it's about this old man who's a farmer whose brother is sick or something, and he doesn't have a car, and he drives to another state on a lawnmower to go visit his dying brother or whatever.
How much did that cost?
It's supposedly based on a true story, but he did it for Disney. My point is that, you know what, every once in a while, this guy who makes these weird, absurdist movies be like, no, I know what I'm doing. Boom. Here's this awesome, heartwarming, amazing drama that was, like, one of the most touching things you'll ever see is The Straight Story by David Lynch, Disney movie.
Yeah, cool.
This log lady scene reminded me exactly what Dave was saying. Like, yeah, this whole book is scatterbrained and weird, and it's just a hodgepodge of documents. And, like, is this even a book? Does Mark Frost even know how to write anymore? Like, what are we doing? And then you hit a moment like this when you're just like, oh no, this is brilliant. Oh,
but
this, you know,
did he write this backstory, like, when he was doing research or pre-pro for the series.
I mean, surely he had the
idea. He's just had it tucked away.
I feel like the idea, surely
he's had this idea for this book forever. And so that's why it's so solid, is because he wrote it 20 years prior.
He had to have been thinking about it. I mean, some of those things, you don't just come up with, you know, putting the ring on Richard Nixon out of nowhere. It's just,
I mean, apparently you can do it in a year.
It's true.
Right.
So true.
I think it's kind of like George Lucas and the Star Wars thing. Like, everyone for years was like, oh, George Lucas, he's got episode 1 through 9. They're all written out. And he knows, like, he wrote this thing, and then he just made the middle three, and now he's going to go back. It's like,
yeah.
No, like he had like an outline.
Jokes so like on said, you, America.
Yeah. The you have an outline, you have thoughts. Like I said, the access guide who Frost was involved with has a little Log Lady backstory, and you get into a little bit in the original show. And I just think over the years, this has kind of like been building in his mind. And but then when he sat down to execute, I think it was all executed in a year. But like I said, it's like, you know, the, you know, your favorite band in the world.
It's a great analogy.
Album in 6 weeks. It's like, yeah, but that one guitar riff was written last. The best guitar riff on the album was written 6 years ago at a sound check when you guys were on tour.
Right.
You know, these lyrics here are from when you were in high school and you just reworked them.
And my girlfriend dumped me.
Yeah. Is anything ever really written in this?
Yeah. That's like true.
Recording or whatever. So, but anyway, the Log Lady stuff is brilliant. I'm really happy you guys like that, because that's basically my favorite part of the book as well.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything else we have before we get to sort of the Briggs reveal and
spoiler? All
right. So this is the part of the book where I kind of just looked up from what I was doing and said, what was the point of this? Because like if the mission given to this person was, hey, figure out who put all this together, to have a page that says, I'm the archivist, my name is Garland.
I got beef.
Dave's got beef.
So I've got beef. And it's that this whole thing could have been settled if they had just read the last page first.
Dude, she even said she did a cursory
scan
of the book. Or dossier, like if you scanned like the last 10 pages, you would know.
Mission accomplished.
And that comes into
walk into Cole's office and say, "Give me something hard next time." Just throw it back at him.
My argument was that Gordon Cole knew this from the beginning, and it was a test for her to get her prepped for things to come and. Basically go through and just really get up to speed on everything.
Unverified.
But you know those tests that are like, read all of the directions.
No, I know.
And then
I understand.
Then sign your name.
Yeah.
And you do all this bizarre stuff before you realize, oh, all I had to do was sign my name.
Right.
You read
Gordon
all the
Cole's
directions.
Gordon Cole's a prankster.
Is he? Also, he didn't shout in the book.
I was waiting. It should have been all caps.
Yeah. It should have been all
the Gordon
caps.
Cole section should have been all caps.
Yeah, but that's like I was saying, this isn't information we could have gotten any other way and it been tolerable.
It's really just for the reader.
Yeah.
Not for her, not for that.
Right,
sake.
But come up with a different premise. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you've just ruined your whole mission of this book. And it's annoying. I got beef. I'm with you.
I've got beef.
I am with you.
Mr. Ring?
Oh, just I kind of agree. I think it was kind of a cheap reveal, but I think that I personally think that was just kind of his kind of throwaway solvable mystery.
Do you think it was like kind of like a cop out? Like, did he maybe start writing this and didn't really know like where to go with it? And he's like, oh, I'll like Briggs was kind of interested and he's militarized and.
No. I think this is something that's been building in his mind since Briggs got abducted in season 2. Like,
okay.
Don Davis, I don't know if they were friends, but he admired the actor who's passed away. I think that same way with the Dougie Milford character, that actor passed away as well. And I think that he liked those guys. And I think that he wanted to flesh out his UFO and secret government conspiracy shit that he's been all about, and the occult stuff that I literally think that he was like, I'm going to set up this mystery of who is the archivist, and the whole book is going to be kind of this common thread keeping it through. And like, when I got to the reveal, I was like, yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Like this is not, the point of this book is not who is the archivist, even though they kind of set that up as the beginning.
As the point of the book.
Yes.
I almost wondered too, because I mean, I didn't read the book till after. I wondered if like that was just something that either was never going to get answered or was maybe going to get answered.
It would have been great if the book just like ended like halfway through a page.
It was just over.
And then TP's like, verified, the archivist died. Or something like that.
I didn't like this reveal. I did like that it's Garland Briggs. I love that it's Garland Briggs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That makes a lot of sense after hearing it.
I don't like it being said flat out in one of the archivist pieces, because one, it's a detriment to the character's ability.
Yes,
right. Like, it doesn't add up either to him in the show being so secretive.
If you're giving this to this agent to figure this out as a test, or even if you already know who it is and you give it to them to find out, don't give them the answer. Like, I want to watch this agent put it together. I want the like Shyamalan breakdown at the end. That's like, given his experience with these people and with this situation and with this project and these interactions.
That would've been cool.
See, I
deduce that the identity has to be Garland Briggs.
I feel like it would have read better as kind of a letter to Coop. Like, you know, it's Briggs the whole time. Kind of spend the first chapter on your backstory of how you became this person who has all this information. And then instead of doing Tamara Preston, do Briggs annotations on the book as letters to the next Watcher in the Woods, which he thought would be Coop. Mm. Like that takes out this mystery of like, who the hell is the archivist? Like, I don't really care.
It would have been fine too if they just if he had mentioned something that made the reader know it was Briggs and maybe she didn't find out. Like, just something that alluded to, you know, that the campsite thing. Even I would have been.
Yeah, because I mean, is this book 20 something years? Was she handed it 20 years after
the show? It was found. I mean, what it says at the beginning of the book is it's found at a crime, like a new an active crime scene.
Okay. So we would know everything and she would not. That those events were so far past that she wouldn't really know anything about it.
Yeah, they're just getting up to speed as they go through these documents.
Yeah,
right.
That's why I would have really liked them to suss out that identity and like prove their skills as an investigator, and then to take it back to Cole and then have like an after. What's it called? Is it an epilogue? Yeah.
Yes.
So that's the one that's after. I have an epilogue that's her letter saying like, yeah, it's like a TP final note, like gave my findings to Gordon Cole. He already knew the identity of the archivist. I'm curious as to what he has in store for me next. Something like that. That would have been cleaner for me.
But then it turns into some like YA mystery series.
Yeah. It's pretty sloppy, and I agree with you. I don't really like it. I have some theories of why that happened, but we can't talk about that till the final dossier is over.
Right. Same.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, great.
Tyler, you had your Briggs, your Watcher in the Woods theory. Do you remember? You
don't. Oh. That is he the man standing in the woods when
Bobby and Leo
are making a deal in the
because
woods.
He's the watcher in the woods. He's checking in on his son.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes so much sense.
I mean, is he?
He also clearly knows that Bobby's involved with drugs.
Yes, he does know that.
He knows.
Yeah.
He also calls him Robert.
The callback to the annihilation of the soul line from Hawk to Cooper. He mentions it. It's what when he's describing his abduction. I thought that was a really cool.
Yeah.
A cool callback.
Yeah.
Well, basically, I think they need the last few pages of the book are they're basically like he's running towards the finish line.
Yeah.
Like I'm not ruining anything.
Mark Frost. Is that who you're talking about?
Yes, Mark Frost is running towards the finish line to get you to the, hey, I need to hand all this stuff off to Cooper. Oh my God, something went wrong. Mayday, mayday, to be continued in the new Twin Peaks TV show.
Okay.
Like, and so remember I told you the original book was The Secret Lives of Twin Peaks? And there was going to be one book. And then at the last minute, there's two books. You're going to get one before and one after.
Two books.
They were the same
book. She's had two visions.
I think this was one book that was perhaps a little more cohesive. But a lot of the stuff in the final dossier would have totally ruined what was going on in the return, and they decided to split it.
Yeah, so you've got, I agree.
This is your prologue. Final dossier is your epilogue in Mark Frost's eyes to the return. So
you I imagine think a book about Twin Peaks twice as thick.
Like, I do have one thing, too, just something I thought of when reading this. You know, Briggs mentions that, you know, he says, I got this message, the Cooper thing. Although he doesn't, I don't know if he specifically says the owls are not what they seem, but, you know, he asks Dougie Milford, he's like, should I give this to Coop? And he's like, yeah, of course. And we know that he does.
Oh, do I?
But then he says something like, oh, this message wasn't for Cooper or something like that. Like it was, I don't know if he says it was for me or for us. He's like, but it wasn't for Cooper, basically. Like the message wasn't for Cooper. So it made me think, like, is Cooper in this sort of scenario, like the owl, as in the owls are not what they seem, like Cooper is not what he seems in this scenario when he visits him at the end of the book?
He's not.
Perhaps it's a warning.
Yeah.
Well, the owls may indeed not be what they seem, but still serve an imperative function.
Right.
They remind us to look into the darkness.
Yeah, and that quote comes up again there, at the end, on a separate page. I just thought that was an interesting way to look at it and to think about it, and just to give it sort of a different context on such a famous quote from the show.
Can't believe we did it, fellas.
We did it. Yeah. I'm sure we missed a ton. I hope anyone who watches and listens that, they give us some feedback, and maybe we can touch on it at some point. There's only one thing left to do, though.
You're right.
Talking for
James!
This is the segment we call Talking Foreheads. This is where we take the material at hand and we rate it on a scale of 1 to 5. James Hurley Foreheads. I will go first.
Oh, all right.
And then I will go counterclockwise from my Zoom meeting screen.
Where are you on your Zoom meeting?
I am top right.
Oh, you are not top right on my screen.
You're not on mine either.
That's fine.
You just tell us who's next.
That was the whole plan.
Okay.
Perfect.
That's why I said my Zoom meeting screen.
Okay.
Everything's fine. And everybody's on the same page. This book is wonderful. Outside of the sloppy reveal at the end, I think this is a very important thing that exists, not only for just fans of the series, but like anybody who wants a masterclass in how do you write a companion piece for anything, this is a great template. Like, put out the backstory that people want, throw the stuff you want in there. Like, talk about the things you like, get it in there, shoehorn that in. That's fine. It's expertly done. And I know that there are things
is
that
shoehorn are gonna come up. A relative of the Horn family?
Yes. Shoehorn, the long lost
new cousin. Shoes.
Issue points. It's all in there. And I'm sure that there are things that are going to relate to stuff I haven't seen yet. I haven't finished season 3, so I'm sure by the time I'm done with that and I give this a revisit, I'm going to just have my mind blown even further. This is a 5 forehead endeavor.
Oh, wow.
Just 5.
Patrick, you're up.
Oh, who? Patrick.
Patrick, you're up.
I have to second pretty much everything you said. And I mean, I look at it almost in the same way as Twin Peaks itself. It doesn't always give you those answers and everything you want, but it's still so damn good. I much like Twin Peaks, get something out of it every time I read it. It's a 5 for me.
Just 5.
Tyler, you're on deck.
Oh, gosh. I'm going to let you fellas down. It was really good. The parts I understood. That rhymed.
It did. Unintentional.
I think my rating will change in the future. And I don't know that for sure, but I'm hoping it does. So for now, it is a solid 4.
Just 4.
I like that. Last but certainly not least, our guest of honor, Jeremiah, take the ring, as it were.
I agree. It's sloppy. There's some things in there that I don't like. There's some stuff in there that I think is kind of boring at times. I didn't really like it at first, but man, like since then I just love it. And I just jump in different sections and like, just as like a reference, I don't know. I love it. I can't imagine my Twin Peaks experience without it at this point. So it's got to be about 4.5. Can you do a 4.5?
Just 4.5.
Yeah, we got you covered.
We got it. We got it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, this has been fantastic. This has been a blast.
That was talking foreheads.
Yeah, I was really, really excited. I was thinking about this all week. I'm like, I'm going to get to talk about the book. No one will talk about the book. We're going to get to talk about the book. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I don't understand a lot of it. And that's fine, because my hope is one day I do. I will keep reading it until I get to the bottom of these mysteries. We are so happy you took the time to talk with us tonight, and I don't think we could have done this honestly without a lot of your input.
It would have been quite brutal.
Yeah. I definitely can't thank you enough for contributing as much as you did, and for making this one of my favorite episodes that we've done so far. This is awesome.
Yeah, it was great.
Oh, cool. I'm glad you guys had. Like I said, I'm super excited. Always happy to talk about the book and stuff.
For anything that we might have missed, or for any comments, questions, or concerns, you can reach us at talkingbackwardspod@gmail.com. We're also on Instagram at talkingbackwardspod. Patrick.
You can hit us up on Twitter at talkingbackward.
Tyler.
Anchor.fm/talkingbackwards.
Big thank you one more time to Jeremiah Beaver. Take the ring.
Mr. Ring. Okay.